Hi, I'm Lisa Davis. Welcome to It's Your Health on Thinking Out Loud on WUML 91.5 FM. What's the right way to parent? Venture into any playground or online message board, and you'll find as many opinions as there are adults present. Every subject from sleep training to timeouts to pacifiers has its supporters and detractors, and every viewpoint can be backed up by a truckload of research and statistics. It's enough to reduce a new parent to tears if the 3 a.m. feedings and endless recitations of Goodnight Moon aren't doing that already. If there is a way to end the madness, to calm your fears and to make those precious early years a source of joy for both of you. Joining us to offer some much-needed relief is Ada Calhoun, a mother herself, who will be talking about her wonderful book, Instinctive Parenting. Her simple yet profound advice, find what works for you and your family and ditch the anxiety and judgment. Ada Calhoun is Babby's founding editor-in-chief. She has worked at New York Magazine, Nerve.com, and Vogue, and written for the New York Times, Salon.com, AOL.com, New York Times, and the anthology One of the Guys. She is a frequent contributor to New York Times Book Review, and it's Babbles. I said Babbies. Babbles.com. Ada, welcome to It's Your Health on Thinking Out Loud on WUML 91.5 FM. I think I was thinking of, like, I don't know what I was, Bubby, I don't know.
Baby,
that's it. But thank you so much for being on It's Your Health. Ada, I love your book, and really, it's exactly what is needed with all the advice-driven parenting blogs and books. Everyone is too stressed out, and I love the stories of your son Oliver and your husband Neil, and you share a story in the book about a fight you had with your husband that was brought on by too many advice-driven books. Can you share that with us and how that was part of what moved you to write Instinctive Parenting?
Sure. I had a new baby. Oliver's just, I think, a few weeks old, and my husband was getting up in the middle of the night to do the 3 a.m. feeding because I, you know, was nursing, but I had pump bottles, and he was going to feed him, and he propped the bottle up in at Oliver's mouth, you know, so he could run to use the bathroom, and I, you know, was just sort of lolling on my bed. I didn't know this, and then I looked over into the crib, and I saw that he had a propped bottle. And I lost my mind. I started screaming, and I was saying, oh, you know, how could you do this to our child? And Neil was like, you've lost your mind. You've officially lost your mind now, and you need to stop reading those books. And it was true. I had just read this book by, you know, very well-meaning attachment parenting writer who said, you know, that if food wasn't associated with love, if you weren't touching your baby while feeding it, that it would basically grow up to be a sociopath. And, you know, you were doomed. You know, you had all these, you know, future serial killer victims on your, you know, hands by this one pop bottle. And, you know, and I realized that those books were making me crazy. And I just needed to not read them and trust my own instincts, which was that, you know, my husband was doing a very good job. And I was very lucky to have somebody who was getting up in the middle of the night with a baby. And I, you know, quibbling over a 5-minute bathroom break should not, it was a bad direction. So.
No, it is true. I mean, I was more in the attachment parenting kind of school, I guess, but at the same time, there were certain things that I was like, oh, come on. You know,
yeah,
it's tough, and it just seems like they expect you to be perfect, and then I think you can go the other way where people are just too extreme on you. Don't feed the, you know, you only nurse every 2 hours, even if the baby's upset and hungry, even if it's obvious, you know. I mean, my daughter honestly would nurse like every 10 minutes. She had a high bubble palate. We had a really hard time with nursing. I was ridiculously stubborn. Looking back, I should have just given her some formula, but I was really stubborn about it. And people say, oh, she just stayed. I said, I know, but she has a problem with her mouth. And then I felt like, why do I have to explain? Like, and I think that's a lot of what the book's about.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you're the mother. You know the situation better than anybody else. And, you know, and it's one of those things where some families do much better with, like, you know, super hardcore attachment parenting. Some families do, you know, way better with, like, you know, parent-led or whatever it's called. And it's so subjective. It's like, it depends on your work schedule. It depends on your, you know, what kind of temperament your kid has. It depends on, you know, your marriage. It depends on like a million factors. So to have, you know, one thing that's going to work all the time for everybody, it's insane.
Yeah, it's like being flexible is the key. And, you know, in the introduction to your terrific book, Instinctive Parenting, you write about chatting with the mother of one of your son's best friends. And you said, quote, it's ironic that I edit a controversial site. I said, cheerily, because I am the most traditional parent ever. Oliver is Ferberized, circumcised, baptized, and vaccinated, not a hip decision in the bunch. Now, what was her reaction to this?
She went pale. She backed away in horror. She was in shock. It was as if, you know, she'd seen a ghost. And I just thought, oh, I'm such an idiot. I can't believe I just rattled those things off because each one is so, you know, it's so controversial and it doesn't seem like it should be. Whether you circumcise or not, it just doesn't seem to matter ultimately and what kind of person you're going to raise. But those, for some reason, those decisions carry so much weight right now, and people judge you so harshly on them, and think that there's only one right way to do it. Anyway, we're very good friends now.
That's good.
She got over it.
Oh, good. You know, it's funny because it seems that no matter what you go with, you're being judged. Like when people found out we opted for the family bed for the first year of our daughter's life, which included our pit bull border terrier mix Bailey, people were like, "Oh my God, are you insane?" I'm like, Bailey would cry when she would cry, and he would get upset because we wouldn't let him lick her. Like, you know what I mean? Like, you think, okay, not only do you have a family bed, but your pit bull sleeps on it. People are insane. I'm like, you know what? It was fine. It was fine. So, and I, you know, your book really forced me to take a long, hard look at myself and my judginess about mothers who didn't try to nurse. I mean, I always say to people, I'm a lactivist, but I'm trying to be more accepting. And then mothers who spend a fortune on baby stuff. I don't understand those $1,000 strollers. I'm totally the secondhand queen of the world, but you know what? That's my choice, and right. I need to be less, you know, uptight about that.
Right. Well, I mean, I'm with you with the expensive stuff. I mean, for me, there's so many other things I'd rather spend money on. That I mean, there's a long list before I'm going to spend $1,000 on a stroller. It's like, yeah, I mean, clothes. dinner's out. Like, anyway. So, like, but definitely, people love their fancy strollers. I mean, I've actually, that's one of the most controversial parts of the book, apparently, because it's like people still come to me and said, you know, I really loved your book. It was really great. I agree with everything except the stroller because I love my bugaboo or whatever it is. And I was like, well, I mean, I don't say that you can't do it. It just, for me, it seems like there's this pressure, like you have to. And obviously, it's like, you know, the kid doesn't care. It doesn't care what kind of stroller it has. It doesn't care what kind of crib it has. It's like, that's all about you. And, you know,
yeah,
and you
no,
can
it's
project
true.
Those desires onto a baby.
Exactly. You know, and you write that there are only three things we need to give our kids, shelter, food, and love. And you devote the book to different aspects of those things. And part one is devoted to shelter. And in, quote, registering what you really need in the nursery, you talk about the things that the parents actually need for the babies. And if you can talk about, like, the, you know, instead of the must-haves and all the gadgets and the $1,000 strollers that we were just talking about, you know, what advice do you have for new parents and what do they really need in the baby's room?
I mean, almost nothing. You know, it's amazing how little you really need, like, when you get down to it. You know, I remember, like, you know, people are like, oh, you have to register because some friends were showing me through your baby shower. And I was looking, and this list is, like, hundreds of items, like, down to the wipes warmer and the bottle sterilizer and blah, blah, blah. And, like, it was, you know, thousands of dollars worth of stuff was recommended to register for. And I just thought, this is insane. I mean, I'd much rather have people, you know, watch the baby while my husband and I go for a walk or something like that. I mean, everything would be really valuable in that those first few months. Mm-hmm. And none of them were really fixed by gear. I mean, some people, I think, you know, sort of throw gear at the problem, you know, of having the baby and feeling kind of out of your depth and think, okay, well, if I have the exact right, you know, stroller, umbrella, grip thing, then it'll be fine. And the fact is, like, nothing can save you. Like, the gear cannot save you. Like, you're really on your own.
Nothing can save you. I love that.
And they just don't care. I mean, our son, like, we had him in a little pack and play next to the bed, you know, for a while, and then somebody gave us, an old cradle, this old, like, wooden cradle, and he loved that because it kind of bent his arms a little bit. Like, you know, he was sort of snug in there, and put him there for a while, and then eventually we got him at crib from IKEA for $100. It was, like, you know, the sum total of the expenditures, you know, is basically $120 or something.
Wow.
And perfectly blissfully happy child, you know, and we, you know, everything fit in our apartment. It was great.
That is, you know, awesome.
I made a cardboard box, you know. I mean, they really, like, they do not care. A drawer. They don't care. As long as you're there, you know, yeah.
Exactly. You know, and in part one, there's shelter, you also address TV or not TV, marital relations, work issues, pets, travel with baby, and more. And of those issues covered in part one under shelter, which ones do you find the most stress-inducing and controversial?
If people really get worked up over TV, I would say, like, I mean, on the playground, especially with, like, two-year-olds, because you're kind of like, you know, it's, I mean, for me, like, we watch TV. We don't watch it, have it on all the time. You know, but definitely, like, my husband, he grew up in the household, it was kind of just on his background. Like, whoever woke up first to turn on the coffee pot and turn on TV. And it was kind of on 24 hours a day. Like, you know, we watch, there are a couple of shows that I think are really great. Like, I really love, like, Backyardigans and Wonder Pets and stuff like that. And you know, it's like a half an hour, you know, an hour here or there while you're making dinner. It's not going to kill anybody. You know, if you learn little songs, it's great. I think it's like,
I love Little Bear. Do you ever watch Little Bear?
Love Little Bear. Love it.
Oh, gosh, my daughter loves it. It's just sweet and kind, and I love the backyard again. Those dances are really great.
The songs are really clever. And, you know, and again, it's one of those things where it's like, you know if it's too much. Like, you know, if your kid starts to glaze over after an hour, then you know to, like, just switch it off, like, and, you mm-hmm. know, go do a puzzle or whatever. But I just think a little bit, you know, of anything is pretty much always going to be fine. You know?
Yeah.
Ice can trust.
Yeah, you know,
I love the ice cream truck.
Oh, yeah. You know, in part two, which covers food, you have, the breastfeeding wars. And this is such a hugely decisive issue among new moms. And I admit it earlier that I'm judgy about women who don't try. I'm like, if a woman tries, I'm not as judgy. But if a woman's just like, I don't even want to try it, I'm like, just try, just see.
Yeah.
But again, I still need to let that go because it's her choice. It's not my body and my decision. But, you know, that's such a tough issue.
Yeah, and it's hard. I mean, I did it. I nursed for, I guess, almost a year, and, you know, and not very much toward the end because my son was, you know, started solid foods about 6 months. You know, and for me, it was like I had a pretty flexible schedule. You know, my husband was home a lot. Like, we were able to kind of make it work, and I had, you know, when I was at Babel, I had, like, you know, breast pump at work, and I'd always joke, it looked like a Catskills bag, you know, like it looked like a weekend bag. They would always be like, oh, going to the Catskills. Yep, be right back. Going to the Catskills. And I'd go home. So it worked out fine, you know. I mean, but again, I had friends who tried really hard and couldn't do it. And then I had I had friends who did it for a little while and just said, I can't, you know, I don't like it, you know. And the baby was happier with formula and they were happy with formula, and, you know, more power to everybody. I mean, it's a tough thing to do. It's like, it requires a lot of physical, you know, effort. It requires a lot of logistics. It requires mm-hmm. a lot of flexibility, you know, and again, I was lucky with my job. I had a couple days a week at home. Not everybody has that, you know, and a lot
yes.
of people are two full-time jobs, and the scheduling just, it's not conducive.
Right. And that's what I liked about your book, because, again, it kind of got me to look at those things that before I would have been kind of closed-minded about. Now,
okay.
You know, I'm definitely, it's good. You know, I can open my mind. I'm open-minded. And, you know, also in the food section, you cover snacks, allergies, junk food, eating while pregnant, and more. And the eating while pregnant cracked me up because, you know, you have those cravings and you wanted that turkey sandwich and you did the research on Listeria, and it was so minimal. But yet they totally freak you out, like, don't eat that. You're a bad mommy-to-be if you eat that turkey sandwich.
Yeah, I mean, I think the thing is, like, every single decision you make has, like, pros and cons, and it has its risks. And, you know, it's a question of, like, what risks are you okay with? And there were risks that I was definitely like, okay, well, if it's a 1 in 20 billion chance that this turkey sandwich is going to, like, wind up in all of us dying, like, I'm going to take it because I really wanted it. And, you know, the odds are it's going to be a good thing for my baby to get those nutrients and for me to get the, you know,
the
sandwich I wanted to work.
Yeah, it's true. And the other thing, too, is with the junk food, you're right. You know, the people that were deprived are the ones that eat it the most. I would go to my friends, because my mom was so health conscious, and I would go to my friend's house, and they would call me Mini Mooch because I literally would, like, raid their cupboards for junk.
Yeah.
And it's funny because I'm pretty health conscious. I mean, not my daughter eats mostly whole foods and stuff, but I do try to get, like, I'll get snacks that are sweet, but, you know, they're made with whole grains. There's still sugar in them. And the cookies, they taste just like regular cookies. I figure, I could afford. I'd rather get, like, you know, the healthier kind, but you know, I'm not completely nuts, but, you know, I could use a little flexibility on that too, but I do agree. I do agree. And then in part three is devoted to love. And on love, you have a part called The Hard Parts. And I love the story about your friend Tara at the zoo. If you can tell us about that, and then also what advice she gave you that really helps when you're in a tough situation.
Oh, sure. Yeah, this is my best friend Tara has three kids, actually the oldest of whom is now a teenager and staying with us, you know, this week right now.
She's
in town for taking some college courses and stuff. But she turned out great despite, you know, all of the parenting things that we talked about. But anyway, Tara was at the zoo with her father and her three kids who were little at the time. And, you know, it was 150 degrees outside, and basically everybody had a meltdown at the exact same moment, like exhausted and tired. And so she said it was just this ocean of, like, you know, tears and melted ice cream and snot and just, like, sweat. And it was all of them, like, all the children and, you know, and it was miles from the exit. And she said she looked at her father and she said, this is hell. We are now in hell. It's the ninth circle of hell. And so basically, like, I had a sort of similar situation where, you know, I was with my son and my stepson, and you know, my son had this total meltdown and there was no way for me to get help. And it was like just this real, really low point where I was trying to nurse him, like while, you know, basically walking and carrying 20 bags. And it was just like nightmare. And but anyway, Tara said that what she learned from the zoo meltdown was, you know, just when you find yourself in hell, get out of hell. And basically it's like you have to realize that's what you're doing. You're in hell and you have to find the exit. And, you know, and it takes a little while and you have to kind of like walk up through the circles of, you know, the inferno. And but then you get out and then everything's fine. And, you know, like for me, it was like realizing that every time I get in a situation, I can just think, okay, what are the steps I need to take to get out of hell? And it's usually like, you know, go find the bathroom, wash your face, like, you know, get some food for the baby, like whatever it is, and just like, you know, step by step get out. And don't take it personally. Just, you know, get very strategic about it.
You know, I love that. I wish I had known that when my daughter, well, my daughter's on the autism spectrum, so she was such an unbelievably challenging, hard baby.
Yeah.
I can't even describe. And we didn't know that when she was a baby. So I remember being in line at CVS, and my baby, you know, was crying, which she did a lot. And an older woman behind me said, you know, oh, you should give her a pacifier. And I said, she won't take one. And she insisted that she would. I was in hell. Like, it was such a, the line was long. I had to get this prescription. It's like, I honestly want, I'm not a violent person. I wanted to punch this woman in the head. And it was just like that feeling. I can't believe I'm admitting that. I'm very open on my show, but it was so annoying to have somebody who you don't even know insisting. I was like, no, I've tried. I've tried. And be like, oh, no, she will. All babies do. I'm like,
right.
No. And that's the other thing with the books, too. I think if you have, and I do a lot of shows on kids with special needs, and I think, you know, for me not knowing, and then I'm reading, like, what to expect, and I'm like, she's a newborn. She won't even take a nap. I mean, she was up, like, she slept maybe an hour a day. I mean, it was completely insane. And these books weren't helping, and it was like nobody – and then the advice you get, and it's like, oh, my gosh. So if I didn't listen to my instincts, I wouldn't have survived.
No,
and that's another reason I like your book, because you never know what you're going to get.
Exactly. Yeah, and then all they'd be completely different. And, you know, I had a good friend and who had a baby 2 weeks before I did, and our sons could not be more different. I mean, they are just polar opposite. They're both lovely kids, but so different. And, and so she was always calling me and being like, my son won't nap at all. And I'd be like, oh, really? Because mine, like, totally won't wake up. Like, he just loves.
I know. I was envious reading your book.
He's been good. Like, but it's one of those things, too, where, like, the stuff that I was doing with my son would not have worked for her and her son, and she had to come up with a completely different strategy than I did. And, yeah, I mean, that's why those, I just feel like any real, you know, strict philosophy is never going to work for, you know, for everybody.
Mm-hmm. You know, and another thing I like about the book, too, is you write about Generation X and how their parenting styles are often a reaction to the way they were raised by baby boomers. And this cracked me up. You wrote, quote, think of women of our parents' generation did the equivalent. Oh, think the women of our parents' generation did the equivalent of 100 Google searches trying to figure out if it's okay to have a glass of wine in the third trimester, please. The cork was out of the bottle before you could say electric company. Well, I always joke that I was raised by a swing and a pacifier. And actually, the sad thing is I'm not joking. I mean, seriously, like, they would leave me for hours. Like, that's just it. So I wanted to go the other way. And then kind of, like, I was kind of forced to do attachment parenting because my daughter wouldn't sleep unless she was on top of me. Not next to me. On top, you know, like, there's certain things that – maybe I wanted to not be so attached, but you know what I mean? So that's why your book is so great, because you have to look at what's going on. But even if my daughter had been neurotypical, like, I think I still would have gone so much the other way because of the way I was raised. And now how were you raised? Were you raised more with the electric company kind of mom?
I watched a lot of TV. I definitely watched a ton of TV.
Oh, my gosh, me too.
You know, I think we all did at that time. You know, I was totally latchkey kid from the time I was pretty young. I mean, my parents were wonderful, and they're fantastic grandparents. I mean, they're just amazing.
Oh, that's great.
Which is really nice. So I grew up in, you know, in New York City, you know, in the East Village. So I had a very kind of like bohemian, you know, kind of rough and tumble childhood. And, you know, so it was great. But again, it was just sort of like a lot of TV, a lot of like, you know, sort of, again, like kind of grown-up centered. And so I think it's interesting to me that, like, I feel like Generation X in general is moving much more to, like, child-centered stuff. Like, they're trying to find even, like, rock music the kids like and that kind of thing. Like, there's this real focus on trying to make everything fun for kids. And that was not a focus, I feel like, of baby boomers. They were like, kids have kids time, grown-ups have grown-up time. And I think there's a nice balance in between those two. Like, you know, I think it's you know, we do a lot of, like, we'll go to Cornell and all the family and go, you know, swimming ocean and go on kitty rides and stuff like that. And then, you know, somebody can come over and hang out with my son, and my, you know, husband and I can go out and have a drink. You know, I think it's good to have both enough.
Yeah, it's really important. And you emphasize that in the book, too, about relationships. So many people don't have – I just did a show earlier with a woman who is a wonderful therapist, Nancy Dreyfus, and she was talking about how couples aren't having sex anymore. And there was a study in Newsweek that was like, you know, a third of all 30-year-olds aren't having sex. I mean, that's, you know, not having sex. And it's like – and using the baby as an excuse. You write about that as well, whether it's not having sex or missing an event or not getting a work deadline done. And it's
right.
important to still not live your life.
Yeah. I mean, it's amazing how, you know, how did people get stuff done before, you know, with children?
Like, somehow it got done.
Yeah, somehow it got done. And maybe it was partially because of the swing and the past fire. I don't know. But, you know, like,
yeah.
And if that's what it takes to, you know, go get the assignment done for, you know, half an hour, a little backyard against a little swing, it's fine. Like, you know, it's important to make a living and to have a partner and all these other things. So,
yeah, it's true.
You know, it's not
it's
a bad
true.
Thing.
Well, like I said, your book is so great, and it's you're such a great writer, and it's so funny. I mean, I was sitting on the couch laughing out loud. My husband's like, "What are you reading over there?" Yeah, and so I would read him parts, and then he would laugh. And, yeah, it's just – it's so nice to have a non-judgy kind of like get over it kind of book. Like, don't be so stressed. Like, parenting is challenging enough. You don't have to make it so complicated.
Thank you so much. That means a lot to me. Because, you know, it's like stuff I was telling myself, too. So, it's, you know, I think – I mean, I'm definitely not an expert. I'm, you know, I'm in the same boat as everybody else who's got a little kid.
No, but you definitely have a natural way. And speaking of that, you collaborated with Tim Gunn, who I love, on his forthcoming advice book memoir, Gunn's Golden Rules. And that must have been so much fun. He has – talk about a natural guy. Just so – he seems so real and kind.
It was, I mean, it was the best, one of the best views of my life. And yeah, it was funny because he liked my book a lot. And he was saying, it's for people without children too. Everybody can read it.
was very enjoyable.
And, good. Well, and he's basically the nicest man who's ever lived. I mean, he literally is like a living saint. And he would, every time I went to his house, he made me cookies. He would pack them up for Oliver to, you know, send them home for him. He gave Oliver like the sweetest, like Winnie the Pooh pop-up book. That, you know, he just is like, he's so kind. He's so sweet and kind and generous. And, you know, and this book is really juicy and it's really funny. Yeah. There's a lot of juicy stuff in it.
Well, I'm really hoping. Now, it comes out in September, right?
Yeah.
I know my listeners would love to have you and he come on together. You and he. I'm not good with grammar. Whatever it is, we would love for you all to come on in September. That would be super fun. Now, Ada, how can people learn more about you and your wonderful work?
Well, adacalhoun.com is out there, and I just sort of, you know, I have pretty much everything on there. And you can see the galleys of the Tim Gunn book. I just took a picture, I guess, a couple days ago when I got the galleys in, and so you can see the cover. It's really cute. He's holding a golden apple and has his jacket off.
You know, just in the last minute, tell us a little bit about Babel.
Oh, sure. Well, I haven't been there since last August, but I was the founding editor-in-chief, and basically it was, you know, sort of started as like a, you know, parenting site for kind of the rest of us, like, you know, this idea that it shouldn't all be, you know, teething, you know, manuals and that kind of thing, and so one thing I did there was just I brought in a lot of, like, personal essays and a lot of reported pieces, you know, just about these really interesting parts of parenting, and I started this column called Bad Parent, which was basically about you know, but confessions to a point, like saying, you know, this is a decision we made and here's why we did it. And, you know, here's what people said about it. And I think it was very cathartic, you know, for a lot of people, readers and writers.
That's great.
Great.
Well, you are delightful. And I look forward to, see, I'm already being presumptuous. I look forward to having you back on in September.
I'd love to, anytime.
That would be awesome. And if people want to reach me, they can go to itsyourhealthradio.org. I hope everyone has a great day. Get Instinctive Parenting. It is a wonderful book. And keep being healthy. Take care. Bye-bye.